This episode of Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by the Madrone Tap House in Old Town Eureka. Madrone has wood fire pizzas, salads, wraps, wings, and a rotating selection of local brews. Madrone is a family-owned business and sources local, organic, and non-GMO products whenever possible. What could be more Humboldt than that? Madrone has outdoor seating and offers delivery, so check them out Tuesdays through Saturdays, noon to 9 p.m. at 421 3rd Street in Old Town, or order by calling 273-5129 or online at madronetaphouse.com. It's Humboldt Holding Up, Humboldt County's premier certified organic podcast. Pumping pure organic sound waves into your ear holes. I'm Stephanie McGarry.
And I'm Andrew Goff. Yeah, in order for a podcast to be certified organic, what would you need?
It just means that the humans talking need to be fed USDA organic grain.
Okay, yeah. Well,
it means that you and I both eat 100% organic, which I'm assuming is true. You do that, don't you? Andrew, no, I know you're kind of a health nut.
Right. Yes. I only eat the best McMuffins. Today on this show, we have a couple of people, actually. How many? We've only done a few, two people. I think this is our third one.
I think this will be number three. Yes.
Yeah. Christina Radelfinger and Doris Miranda are dairy farmers from the cream city of Ferndale. And they are a part of a co-op, Western Organics, which produces Ferndale Organics A2 milk, which you can find in stores around Humboldt County and beyond, as we find out. And yeah, we just wanted to have them on. We just talk about like what this thing is they're doing, like how are dairy farmers doing? How did dairy farmers in Humboldt fare during pandemic? And also, what is this unique niche that they have pursued, producing specifically A2 milk? You don't know what that is? We will talk about it.
What the heck is A2 milk? All I know is that it's the latest in milk trends, and therefore I want it. I only drink milk that is trending, and of course organic, which theirs also is. So
trending milk, yes. But yeah, without further ado, what do you say we get them in here, Christina and Doris.
Hi.
How's it going?
There we go.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you for being willing to do this weird thing.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
My perception of dairy farmers is that you're very busy, hardworking people. So what am I taking you away from? What would you be doing right now if you weren't doing this silly thing with me?
Well, go ahead, Teresa. Right.
Okay. Probably paperwork. That's my role.
And mine too. I've been neglecting my office work a lot lately because I have this new part-time job where I'm delivering milk to local stores. So I actually need to run to Arcata and deliver some milk later. Yeah.
When you texted yesterday, you said you were delivering milk to Southern Humboldt. And that's a regular run that you have to do.
Okay, so we're just starting, and so we are taking turns amongst our five dairy farmers who's driving the truck. So I drew the short stick this week, and I was on the route. And yeah, so I was in Southern Humboldt yesterday, Northern Humboldt Tuesday. I need to make another run back to Arcata for another store that ran out, so...
So it sounds like the person that draws the short straw, like the delivering milk, that's one of the more grueling aspects of this operation that nobody wants to do.
I don't know about grueling. It's just a lot of driving and our milk truck
takes time.
Luxurious vehicle to drive around. So.
Okay. Okay.
You said you have to go back to an Arcata store because they ran out. That sounds like a good thing. Already
super good news.
Which store is that?
Great. That's the Rays in Arcata, and they are a new store with us, and I took their first delivery to them last week. And when I made the route earlier in the week, they didn't think they needed any, and then they changed their mind. So I'm happy to go back up there. Yeah.
And so you two are both affiliated with dairy farms that are part of this group that's teamed up. So why don't you just tell us what that is?
Okay. We're actually a co-op, and we're called Western Organic Family Farms Cooperative. And we're a group of five farmers in Humboldt County. And we actually have one farm in Texas. And then we developed a label called Ferndale Organic A2A2. So it's the label of the co-op.
That's what we're distributing.
Well, we started the co-op in I think it was late 2018. And then 2019, we really kicked it off, and the group of us, and just, we're kind of brainstorming what we wanted to do. And the A2 came up, and it's kind of new out there. Not a lot of people know about what it is. And we have kind of been niche farmers throughout our history anyway, doing organic. And it's a great area that we're in, you know, there in Humboldt to do that. So when we learned about the A2, we thought, yeah, that's something we want to do. And it's taken us over 2 years to finally get there. And we just launched in April, I believe.
Okay. You say you have, most of the farms are in the Ferndale area. Yeah. In the Western Organic.
Well, we have family. one farm in Arcata. And then there's four that are kind of right there in Ferndale.
Okay. And is there any kind of, not that it will necessarily mean much to me, but is there any sort of like scale that you can give as to like, you know, how much milk you're producing?
Yeah, our farms are really diverse. Our smallest farms, probably, what do you think?
100 cows, maybe?
70 cows. Like And then our largest farms, probably 1,200 cows. And my farm personally is, we milk about 200 cows. So we're all a little different.
Okay. Cool. We talked to a farmer once on this podcast a little while ago, and she told us that asking farmers how many animals whatever kind, is a big no-no.
That's
because we asked her. So now we're like, we asked her how many pigs she had or something. And she's like, oh, you don't ask that in the farm world. And this is the first time you'd ever heard of it. So,
Well, you didn't ask. I volunteered it.
I noticed that you volunteered the information. So that's, we appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you for keeping me in line, Stephanie.
So when you say that, you know, that this is a co-op of five farms, I feel like I haven't heard of a lot of setups like this. You know, is doing things this way a common thing?
Yeah, it actually is very common in ag, not just for dairies, but grain growers, and you know, there's a lot of co-ops in ag.
Okay, sure. Yeah. And now that you mentioned, I guess I have heard of some like a grain co-op specifically.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But yeah, I guess I never really realized exactly how they worked. That, you know, you said it's four of them are local, and then one is in Texas.
One is in Arcata, and we have a dairy in Texas that is part of the co-op. It's not producing milk for the co-op yet. But that's part of our long-term plan. And that's
okay.
The way the Texas dairy works is there's a dairy that's owned by a family in Ferndale, and they also have a property in Texas. So it's not like we just contacted someone in Texas.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, there is a connection.
That makes sense. So you say that, you know, this is something that's sort of common. And in the ag world, why exactly is this? What is that? What are the benefits to doing this?
Well, I think farmers feel like they'd have more a larger voice if they work together, and that's just been kind of common in the ag industry for as long as I can remember. You know, it's hard being out there on your own sometimes. You know, you find people that are doing like things, and you try and make a go of it together, you know, and co-ops start small and they grow, you know.
Yeah.
These five particular farms, sorry, Andrew, these five farms actually used to all belong not to a co-op, but they sold their milk independently to a processor. Mm-hmm. And that processor about 3 years ago stopped taking milk from our shed, like our milk shed. So we kind of, that's why we, Andrew, you had asked, you know, why did you form this co-op? That was kind of our history. So we had nowhere to sell our milk. And so we kind of all banded together and started this co-op out of necessity, basically, because we didn't have a home for our milk. So
yeah, I've heard kind of rumblings about this. And, you know, as I say, like, this isn't my world, so it's hard for me to kind of perceive all of the factors here. But you talk about not having a place to sell your milk. Like, this was a kind of a new development, I think, right? That right. local dairies have not. Well, why don't you explain exactly what the market's been like these last couple of years?
So at that time, I think that our processor was under a lot of financial stress, and they were looking at ways to cut costs. And I'm sure, as you know, our area is really expensive, like for freight to get things, goods in and right. out of here. It's very expensive. So I think that as a business decision, they decided that our milk was costing them a lot of money, basically. Mm. So they, you know, had to make a business decision, and that was what they decided. So we had to come up with our own plan, which, you know, was totally new territory for all of us, but we kind of banded together and came up with this plan. And, you know, it's been a lot of trial and error figuring things out as we go. Yeah. Like, we're definitely all new, you know, we're dairy farmers and we've been doing that. We're pretty good at that. But as far as like the business aspect of things, that's all new to us. So it's been a lot of experimentation and questions and connecting with the right people and things like that.
So this is the direction that your handful of farms decided to go to, you know, team up and do Western Organic. But like for other dairies in the area, what do you hear? Like, what are other people doing? Because I assume that everyone's been kind of affected by this new direction that the industry has taken.
Right.
Yeah, it's been tough on dairies in our area because we have kind of become fragmented, you know, and it's, you know, you try to find the best home you can for your family and your business, because we're all family farms, you know, family run dairies. And so we try to make a go of it best we can, but, you know, finding a home and keeping it can be tough. And that's it's just nature of where we're at right now. Most of the farms in our area are organic. It's a beautiful, you know, area to graze cows and do the organic milk, which we all love. But it can be challenging because of our location too.
Yeah.
Remote, you know, so not a lot of people find an interest to come up there and get milk because it is a cost.
Yeah. Now, does this fragmentation that you talk about, does any of this harken back to, you know, kind of what happened with Humble Creamery a decade or so ago? Is that kind of where that started, where there was a little bit more tumultuousness?
I'm sure, because there's only a couple, you know, processors that are in the area that were taking milk. That probably had a lot to do with it. And, you know, have a local creamery, and you know, for dairymen, and the best solution is to be able to ship your milk the shortest distance possible.
Right.
You just cut out a lot of costs that way for the same thing as people coming in here and getting it. Yeah. We don't have to ship our product a long distance because there's so much cost.
Yeah.
So, but everybody has their own business plan, and you know, we have to make the best, and we have to be flexible, and we have to realize that, you know, when one door closes, another door opens. And so we had to look at it as, well, it's not the best place to be, but what can we do with the situation? You know, let's try to make the best of it and see if we can create a business for ourselves and something that we are passionate and believe in and see where it goes. Everything's a risk. Yeah. Everything's a risk.
Sure.
You know, we don't know. Nobody knows what tomorrow's going to bring. And you know, if this is, we think we have a good plan, we think we can make it work, we're trying.
So yeah.
You know.
You talk about your passion for this work, and I want to diverge us a little bit. You know, something we like to do on this show is just kind of get people's personal histories, and I thought, like, in this instance, it might make sense to talk about how each of you came to the dairy life, because, you know, if I've done my research correctly, y'all took different paths to this. I was looking for you, Christina. I found this old, like, milk council ad on YouTube.
Yeah,
that you were in. Yeah. Where you talk about you being a first generation milk producer. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that kind of happen for you?
Okay. Yeah. So I'm a veterinarian, and I was practicing as a veterinarian, and my husband was working. We were actually here in Ferndale, and my husband was working as a beef rancher, and we had some friends that were in the dairy business, and they actually were moving to Tillamook, Oregon. And so we went out to visit them, and there was a dairy there for lease. And we went and checked it out, and just sort of on a whim, and, you know, being young and dumb, ignorant, maybe not dumb, but ignorant, we thought, oh, that sounds fun. Let's do that. So I quit my job as a veterinarian, and my husband quit his job as a beef rancher, and we moved to Tillamook, Oregon, and started dairy farming. The gentleman that had the lease, the condition with the lease was we had to purchase his 50 Holstein cows. So we purchased his 50 Holstein cows, and started dairying. And I always tell people, it was one of those things where if you knew then what you know now, there's no way you probably would have ever gotten into it.
Yeah, but,
we're so grateful we did, because it's been an amazing experience. But there was a lot of learn as you go, learn from your mistakes, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like you both
learning curve. Yeah,
it sounds like you both have a background that's related, you know, so, but without, like, just knowing, you know, the actual dairy farming part. Yeah. I mean, I imagine that it's, like, pretty difficult.
Yeah, it really was. But like I said, I think not knowing, it was like you were going into it blind. It was probably way better than knowing what you were doing.
Yeah, but no regrets though.
No, it's an amazing life. It's, you know, it's definitely a lot of hard work, and your animals don't take days off. So, you know, someone's always got to be there to provide for them. But it's very rewarding, and, you know, it's a great way to raise children, and it's been a really great experience. So,
And then for you, Doris, my perception is that that many Mirandas over the years have lived that Cream City life. Yeah, is that that's right?
That's
right?
True.
Okay, yeah, can you talk a little bit about that history?
You know, I married into a family that had been dairying for generations. On my father and grandfather and his grandfather had been dairying, but at the time we married, my family was not in dairy, so I married into a family. I had already an established dairy business, and how it goes is, you know, his dad retired, so, you know, naturally he stepped into that role, and that's kind of where we for the last 30 years is doing that. And Christine is so right, it is an awesome way to raise a family, but it does have its challenges. I mean, you're in that business, and you're right in the market, and all the different things that bring along. A lot of rewards. I wouldn't change it, but it's, yeah, that's why there's probably less than 2% of us doing it today, because there's a lot of difficulties in trying to make it work. But so a lot of the farms, you know, that we have in the co-op are generational farms, you know, that they've gone from their father, their grandfather, and the land and everything. And so you just kind of continue on with that practice, and then move into the next generation, try to update, modernize, because we're all dealing with farms that, you know, only milk 25 cows or 50 cows, you know, back in the day, and then hundreds of cows, you know, so with older farms and trying to modernize those, and, you know, try to move into the 21st century, and everybody, you know, have all of the modern equipment and deal with the employees and stuff. It's pretty challenging, but
yeah,
wouldn't change it.
Yeah, it seems like I can't wrap my head around all the moving parts that it would take to get milk out of a cow and then to people that want to consume that milk. It seems daunting.
Yes.
We'll have to have you out for a tour.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly don't even, I mean, I assume is it mostly machines doing the milking now, or is it hand?
Yes.
Hand milking? Yes.
Hand milking.
I mean, I think there's probably some small farms that hand milk, but very few. Really? Yeah. So it's all mechanical. Yeah. I mean, there are robotic milkers, but all our dairies in our co-op there's employees that we have, or ourselves are applying the machines to the cows. And typically it's twice a day. They get milk twice a day at our farm. I don't know. Do you know of any dairies in the valley that milk three times a day?
I don't, not that I know of, no.
Yeah, there are some farms like in the Southern California or the Valley of California that milk up to three times a day.
Yeah.
So,
Okay.
Well, let's talk a little bit again then about the Ferndale Organics label and what you guys boast that you produce is this A2 milk that Doris was mentioning at the beginning of this. So for the, I think a lot of people probably don't know what that designation means. Can you explain just exactly what A2 milk is and how it's different from most of the other milk that people these days are probably drinking?
Cows, they have determined, actually produce two different types of proteins, an A1 protein and an A2 protein. But all other mammals, humans included, only have A2 proteins. So it all comes down to that protein in the milk, that when humans drink that, sometimes they'll experience, side effects, maybe from that. They'll stomach aches, different kinds of things. And so they found that by removing that A1 protein out of the milk and just going with an A2 protein, that a lot of people are finding out that they don't have those same issues with milk. And so everybody, people want to say I'm lactose intolerant, but it's probably not the lactose. It's most likely the protein that's causing this issue. And, we never didn't realize how important that was until we experienced it ourselves with our grandson. And since then, we've had so many stories of different people, but, he had eczema after he went off of mother's milk, and he just developed it after he was 1 year old. Pretty bad case, and where his hands were bleeding and cracked and everything. Wow. And finally, my husband says, we've been researching things and found out that, hey, the A2 protein, it says that, try the A2 protein without the A1, it might help clear that up. So we ended up getting just the A2 milk and putting him on that. And 3 weeks later, his hands were getting better, and we couldn't believe it, and now today he doesn't have any issues, but he does have to watch if he eats too much ice cream or yogurt and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Only drinks the A2 milk and he doesn't have any issues. And we've had many different people with the same similar experiences, haven't been able to drink milk for 30 years. And oh my gosh, I try A2 milk and all of a sudden, wow, I'm drinking milk again. And we feel like we're doing the right thing by being able to produce this milk this way, and excited that we can provide a something to the community and that will bring people back to milk. So
is it fair to call this a movement? Because I was kind of Googling around, and it does seem that there are other local farms that, or not just local farms, but farms across the country that have made this decision to kind of pursue specifically this A2 milk. Yeah, is this a trend?
I think so.
It's a pretty small.
Go ahead. It's a small group, but it's a niche that I think people are trying to fill and provide to consumers that they're, I think any product that people consume, it's consumer driven, right? Like you can't just make something and people aren't going to buy it. Like, so we're trying to provide something that the consumers are looking for, and that's something that's a little different that will set us apart from other products. So, and I can talk a little bit to how we determine what protein our cows are producing, because I think that's a question people are curious about too. Yeah. So a cow is born producing either A2 protein or A1 protein. And the way we find out what protein our cows produce is we take like a small DNA sample, a tissue sample out of their ear, mm-hmm. and submit it to a lab. And like 3 weeks later, we get the results back and we find out whether the cow is an A1 producer or an A2 producer. There's actually three different types if you want to get super nerdy. There's an A1, because they're getting an allele from each parent, right? Their dad gives them one and their mom gives them one. So they're A1, A1, A2, or A2. That's why our product is called A2. Okay. So the A1 and the A1A2 producers are both producing the A1 protein, right? So the A2A2 cows are the cows that we're looking to retain and milk for our product. That's why it's been a process, right? So we've been at this for like 2 years, and it's not something we can just do overnight, because we can't just all of a sudden turn all our cows into A2 producers, right? So we're taking most of our farms, we do artificial insemination. So we use bulls for breeding purposes, but mostly we use artificial insemination. So all our bulls that we select, that we get frozen semen, they're all, we can tell whether they're A1A1, A1A2, or A2A2. So all those bulls that we use in artificial insemination are A2A2 bulls. And then we're using that semen to breed all our cows, and hopefully then producing more A2A2 babies that in 2 years will produce A2A2 milk.
Okay. So just to be clear, like all these times that I've just called it A2 milk, that was incorrect. This is A2A2 milk.
Well, I mean, theoretically, yes, that's right. But I mean, if you're calling A2 milk A2 milk, you're inferring that is A2A2 milk.
Okay. Right? I just want to make sure I'm right on my terms here. Okay.
Because otherwise it would be A1 at A2 or A1A1. Right. And then I assume that most, you know, when you drink milk that you buy, it's not one carton or one bottle of milk from one cow, like the milk gets mixed, right? So that's why that's why it would all be mixed kind of regardless of like the makeup of the cows. I was gonna ask, I don't know like how deep your understanding of this would go, but you know, it kind of sounds like one of you was, you know, saying that, you know, this is also all other mammals, you know, are just A2, and it seems like at least like long ago that would have been all cows would have just produced the A2 milk too. Am I right about that? Like it's through breeding that you get the A2A2. So it was also through breeding that we sort of ended up with the A1A2, I assume.
Evidently, that's kind of the story that we've learned, that it was a genetic mutation thousands of years ago that happened. And because probably at one time they were all A2. We don't know exactly how that happened, but that's what we've found out today from all this, the testing that they've done, that there's actually those two proteins.
Hmm. Okay. So it wouldn't have been an intentional, when it comes to, you know, agriculture business, you know, that sometimes, I know that you do intentional, you know, breeding to, or, what am I trying to say? Not breeding when it's you know, vegetables and stuff like that. Right.
I don't think that anyone intentionally changed the base in protein. That's the protein.
Right. I guess I was curious if there was some advantage to this in sort of maybe bigger farming, that they would want these other proteins because maybe it keeps better, or you know, if there was any actual attempt to breed cows this way.
A natural process. Yeah. That it came about
eventually ended up that way.
And it's not necessarily that there's something wrong with A1 milk. It's just there are some instances whereby A2 milk might be preferable to certain people? Like, is that what we're saying? I don't know.
what we're saying is we're providing an alternative, which there's so much out there, you know, I mean, your soy milks to your almond milks and to your lactose-free milk. This is another alternative for people to try, you know, and people are going to, they think is the best for them and their families. And that's kind of what we experienced when we did organic too, is that it wasn't for everybody, but a lot of people that wanted it, that's all they wanted. You know, they really believe in it and they're passionate about it and that's what they want. And this is kind of a, you know, the A2 company came to the United States, I think 2015, and they started their conventional line. And you know, of course, we're going to look at that and say, well, there's an opportunity there because they've done well to provide an organic alternative. You know, we're small farmers. We don't have large budgets like a company, big conglomerate company like that. They've kind of, you know, been here almost 6 years now, and they've been able to educate a lot of people because up until then, really nobody here in the United States really knew much about A2. There was little pockets, but they weren't going anywhere, you know? But when the A2 company came and they landed on the scene, they did a lot of marketing. They were on television a lot. You would see them out social media. So I think it's really brought the consumer education level up to what they have to offer. And so an organic alternative was just kind of a natural thing. And that's where we saw an opportunity.
Yeah. So you're pursuing this kind of more niche product. And I wonder, because you mentioned about people's other options out there. Like, how much do people's taste trends affect what y'all do? Like, more than ever before, there are all these other quote milk options. You know, you say almond milk, oat milk, soy milk. Like, what factors like that affect what you do,
Christina?
I guess can you ask the question again, because I'm not sure what, I know there's opportunities out there, but
I guess just like are you aware of it? Like, is it when you see, like, you know, more people are drinking oat milk, is that something that concerns dairy farmers or
I mean, anything that's taking people away from dairy milk obviously is a concern to me, because I'm a dairy farmer, right? So I mean, everyone has their own taste and opinion, and I'm all for that. Like, I feel like people should consume what they want to consume. Of course, me personally,
sure, sure,
I consume dairy milk, but that's just my personal preference. And but yeah, no, I know people have, you know, either for health reasons or allergies, or you know, if they're lactose intolerant, like, they've kind of turned away from dairy. But we're hoping this is something that can bring them back, or at least try it, see if it works for you. And hopefully it does. And yeah, and it tastes really good too. My son is like a total milk snob.
Yeah.
He won't drink anything but our milk now. So
I know when you left your first message, you were tempting us with bringing us by some milk. And it's like, I have to, well, I mean, well, I'll go buy some, but you know,
you, no, no, you we'll don't, bring you some.
Well, okay. This is like, well, then the other thing I wanted to, you know, talk about is just, you know, this has been a very crazy year. So, you know, on top of all of the other things that have been making it more challenging for milk producers, you had a global pandemic to contend with. What has this last year been like for, let's say, like, specifically dairy farmers in Ferndale? What have the conditions been like there that have made it even more challenging?
I think, you know, there's been, of course, started out with a lot of fear because it was so many unknowns. People didn't know, you know, nobody's ever dealt with this. It's very scary. And so people were very cautious. But I can only speak for myself, but we're fortunate with farmers that we do a lot of work outside.
Yeah.
So we're in a lot of open spaces. And I think that's one thing that gave people a little bit of reassurance, because everything was hearing, oh, keep your distance, you know, all that. And we were able to do that for the most part. we have jobs and one person might be out changing a line of pipes, or somebody might be clipping a field on a tractor, or somebody might be feeding the cows, somebody might be feeding calves. So they're kind of separate in their own jobs. And, you know, we took all the necessary precautions and tried to get ourselves educated as best we can. And, you know, adhere to all the OSHA standards and, you know, try to get, it's tough for small business. Everybody knows how tough it was. Yeah. We did the best we could. And I think we really came through it pretty well, but I think we're just fortunate being in the industry that we are. We're outside a lot. There's not a lot of inside jobs.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Doris and I talked about this morning. We were saying that, you know, nobody told our cows about COVID and they kept showing up for work every day. So somebody had to go feed them and milk them. So we didn't really have a choice, you know, and fortunately our employees are all amazing. And, you know, they're super passionate about the industry and the animals too, which is, you know, if you're doing that job and dealing with animals every day, you have to enjoy it and like what you do. So we were fortunate in that sense too, that we have really loyal employees that
would come to work show today, up every day. Yeah. Even when they're scared, that they would come to work and show up and take care of the animals. So yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah. What is your you both kind of your lives kind of revolve around Ferndale, like, right? You're both, that's kind of where your universe, your daily universe is. Like, what is your perception as to how this last year has affected the town? You know, I mean, I know obviously tourism is a big part of Ferndale. Like, what's the pulse of the Cream City right now? How do you feel like things are going down there?
I think I was just saying in the last like 3 weeks, I've noticed just being uptown that tourism really has started picking back up. You know, town's active. There's a lot of tourists in town. It's just it's a really nice feeling because it did seem like a ghost town for so many months. And, you know, I don't have a business in town. I don't have a restaurant, but I know, you know, we have friends and that do, and I think it was really difficult for them, but our community is super tight, and I think we did the best we could as far as supporting each other and, you know, supporting local and trying to help out those restaurants with takeout or whatever we could do, you know, during that time. So I'm sure it's been a tough year for everyone, but I feel like you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, like with tourism picking back up and things being busier in town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How much of a difference does that make to dairies? It seems like mostly your products, you depend on just stores carrying them and people buying them at grocery stores, right? So that would be relatively unaffected during a pandemic.
Dries and I talked about that too this morning. So to a point, yes, but we also felt the effect because less people were eating out, right? Like people weren't going out to restaurants, and a lot of dairy products are consumed in restaurants. And so that was one way that the dairy industry was affected. And then the other way, in processing facilities, they saw a backup in milk processing because the employees, you know, they had to shut down processing facilities because those employees are in closer contact with each other. And if they had, you know, a scare or some cases and they had to shut down for a period of time. Well, when you shut down processing, it backs up the chain of milk coming behind it, right? So, you know, we did see effects that way. Like it was more difficult to get milk processed or, you know, our milk had to be diverted to a different processing plant that was available and open. So our freight may have been more expensive. Things like that.
Does it feel hopeful right now? Like it's like everything's opening up, which seems like we're, you know, cases are down, we're on the right track. Like you're feeling good about the way things are going?
I think so. I mean, I think it's kind of a natural thing this time of year, you know, spring, everybody feels like they want out and want to start living again after hibernating for the winter. So I think it's just kind of a natural thing. People are anxious to get back to their normal lives. Aren't we all, you know, it's just we've had enough. It's been a long year. It's been tough on everybody. And now we just want to start being with our friends and our families and living our normal lives and seeing our kids, you know, playing sports again and doing all the normal things we're used to doing. So looking forward to those days. And hopefully there's a lot more of those in front of us than what we just left behind, you know?
Yeah, it's been a crazy kind of phenomenon, like living in Humboldt through this whole thing. Because as you say, you know, your cows came to work. Like, it's a different situation here in a rural community than it, you know, a lot of the information we get is, you know, produced in larger cities. So I think that they had a much different experience than we did here. Because yes. For the most part, you know, this year it's been difficult and it's had its challenges. But like, to be in Humboldt during this seems like we were dealt a pretty good hand.
I can never imagine being like on the 12th floor of an apartment in New York City.
Yeah.
Quarantine, you know, like at least we have open space so kids could run around outside. And yeah.
I mean, I feel like that same thing, Christina. I mean, you probably can agree with me that because we're out in the, you know, the farmland, we have open spaces. So, you know, we're at home, our lives don't really change that much, you know, but people we're used to going to an office every day or working in a building with 50 people or 100 people or living in a high rise apartment, their lives were a lot changed, a lot more than ours. So we were so fortunate to be in like a small community away from things. We were kind of sheltered that way, feel fortunate.
Kind of sadly, we found out that dairy farmers kind of live their life in quarantine all the time.
What's
going on? You've been sheltering in place for decades, and you just didn't.
Pretty much.
We're kind of an odd bunch. We're a little bit different that way, but
been around a lot more cows than people. I feel like I want to ask this silly question, but it seems just. It seems so silly and kind of wooey, but like, I feel like, Christina, since you're a veterinarian too, and you work with animals, I feel like you're probably very, like you have a relationship with your cows. Do you think that the cows can tell when something is not right? In the world, like,
that's not a funny question. Actually,
okay, good. Are the cows are they affected in any way?
Well, cows are like they're such creatures of habit, and I think that I don't know if they knew about the pandemic, but you know what I mean, like any abnormal thing in their daily routine, like they're very aware of, like they are used to. You know, we have one cow that she's the last cow in the barn every day. Every day she's like, they have a routine. They like to eat at certain places. They know when they need to come in to be milked. They know what's going on. I don't know if they were aware of the pandemic, but they're very aware creatures and curious creatures. So, people should give them more credit.
I got no beef with cows.
That they might be able to tell that the people around them are going through something and maybe that it's just like throwing things off a little bit for them, that maybe like I don't know for if sure. cows get depressed and decide one day that they don't feel like making milk. Does that happen? I don't know.
Their milk production does decrease when they're off, like if they're ill for any reason or reason they can drop in milk production. So that's actually one parameter people monitor. So if they have milk meters in their barn and they see that a cow's been producing X amount of milk routinely on a regular basis and their milk drops, then they would pay attention to that cow because something's obviously changed, something's different.
Wow.
And it could be that she's sick. I don't know about depressed, but it could be that when they're ready to be bred, when they're ovulating, they are much more active and sometimes their milk production decreases because they're walking around a lot and they're not eating as much. And so, there are a lot of different parameters you can look that way.
Yeah. I thought of something else I wanted to ask about Western Organic. Like, so you guys have been doing this for about three years now. Are you, and there's five farms affiliated, like, are you looking to expand? Would you be open to bringing on board other farms if they switched over to A2 milk?
Yeah, yes, we would. I mean, you know, we're a community and we have, you know, all are dealing with pretty much similar things in the area. Yeah. And so we're a lot, there's a more, I think, that has us in similar situations than different. And so obviously we went with a label that's inclusive, being yeah. Ferndale Organic. Yeah. If that was ever the case and things picked up and we had needs for more milk, absolutely.
Yeah.
A good thing for farmers, for sure.
That you know, you talked about having to do the testing to ensure that you have the right cows. Is that something that what does that cost? Would that be cost prohibitive for some people, or is that a pretty easy thing to do?
I mean, it's not super cheap, but I think it's about $13 a cow to test.
Okay.
So it can add up, you know, pretty fast if you've got, you know, several hundred head to do, but take it in stages, do what you can do. You don't have to do it all in one chunk. Yeah. You know, it's something we learned to do. Anybody can learn to do it. And if the right situation was someday and somebody was needing the milk, that absolutely, you know, if people were interested, we definitely want to look at it.
Could you ever foresee a time when Humboldt became like an A2 hub? Like where Humboldt was just like, all right, we're all going to go this direction because it's profitable and healthy and we can all do it. And there's incentive to.
Yeah, I can see that, you know, we can become a real niche community of A2 producing cows. I think it's a way to put, you know, the Ferndale Valley on the map, and we have a lot to offer. We're unique, you know, in so many different ways. And we have a beautiful area to share with the you know, the world. And I think if it ever happened, it'd be a great thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I don't know if it will or not, but if it did, it'd be okay.
Come here for the cannabis and A2 milk. That's all it was.
Yeah.
We are going to be the Napa Valley of A2 milk and cannabis. And maybe this will be a thing, like a combination at some point. You go to a cannabis lounge that serves only A2 milk, and I don't know.
Could add that. That's going to be our next niche. We're going to be Ferndale Organic A2
cannabis infused milk.
Well, some of the things you were talking about too. You know, people are really into the, you know, some of the health benefits of cannabis now. Oh, we're seeing it really go in that direction, and some of the things you even mentioned, you know, just like eczema, you know, I've heard people really swear by certain CBD products, you know, for that. So I don't know, maybe we're onto something.
It might be, well, who knows, with something to look at, you know?
Okay, well,
where we're at.
Lactose should open a milk bar, and then you can infuse milk with different things. One of them,
milk
CBD.
Bar.
See how it goes. Yeah.
Is that a thing anywhere? Are there milk bars?
No, you should make it up.
I just remember it from Clockwork Orange. So now that's kind of the vibe doesn't seem like seems a little creepy to me, but but yeah.
Go ahead, Steph.
No, please.
Well, I mean, that was, you know, pretty much. I don't. Is there anything else that you feel pertinent that you would like to talk about? Western Organic, or Ferndale Organic label.
If you can just maybe talk about what stores we're in locally, so people locally will know where to find.
Yeah, I can do that. So I have my cheat sheet right here.
Okay. Yeah.
So in Southern Humboldt, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, and I apologize in advance.
Chautauqua.
Thank you.
He already knows. Yeah.
It's a really cool store. I hadn't been there until we started.
It is a very nice store. Very nice store.
And Miranda Market, which is also a beautiful store.
I shouldn't say
this because it's all my stores, but okay. ShopSmart in Redway, Ray's in Garberville. Hobie's Market, Scotia, Mersch Market in Hydesville, Ray's in Fortuna, and Ferndale, you can find us in Red Front, Valley Grocery, J&W Liquors. We're at Lolita Market. We're at the North Coast Co-op in Eureka, hopefully soon to be in Arcata. Murphy's, all the Murphy's Markets, Cut and Blue Lake, Sunny Bray, Westwood, Trinidad, and the Ray's in Arcata, which is where I have to go today.
Now, did I, when I was looking...
Eureka Natural Foods, right?
Eureka Natural Foods. Foods.
And we just, now we're in Wildberries.
Okay.
Right.
And there's a little market in Trinidad. I don't know what the name of that one is. Is that a Murphy's?
There's a Murphy's in Trinidad.
Oh, that's Murphy's.
Yeah.
Almost sounds like more places than not to me. So that's a good list.
We've had really, really good success. People don't, when they know it's local, they want to support local. Yeah. That's what's so great about where we live. They recognize it and, this is actual local dairies producing this milk. Yeah. They want to.
Well, and you said all those local places, but did I see also on your website that you've also broken out of Humboldt, but right? There's a lot of places outside of the county that carry.
We even have, I think, five or six stores in Hawaii that have picked up our milk. So I was like, take a vacation to Hawaii and buy local milk.
Now, how does that work? How do you get, you ship milk on a boat?
I think
boat?
They fly it over there.
Really?
I think they fly it weekly, I think. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And we're in.
Yeah, we have a distributor that is based in Chino and then Stockton. And so that distributor sells to stores in that area. And then I don't know how they must distribute to Hawaii.
They're just part of their distribution and they really wanted the product over there. They knew about, they understood about the A2. It wasn't something we had to educate them on. They really wanted.
That's gotta make you feel like kind of a big shot, right? They're flying your milk to Hawaii.
Can I deliver milk there?
Business trip to Hawaii. Okay. But recently we were actually picked up by Erewhon down in LA, and we're in Lassen's, we're in a whole bunch of different independents down in the southern part of the California, and we're branching out into other states. Some in I think Utah and
Colorado, maybe.
Okay, yeah. All right. Well, cool. Well, unless there's anything else that you want to get out there, I just want to thank you for being willing to participate in this weird technical staring at people on screens thing that we've all grown accustomed to. Christina and Doris, Western Organic is the co-op, and Ferndale Organic A2A2 is the label that you can look for at stores around Humboldt and the world.
And Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I look forward to trying it. Thank you for all of that information, educating us more on how this works. I think it's really, I didn't mind the nerdy stuff at all. Okay. I thought it was really cool.
Please, some of your listeners will appreciate the nerdiness in me. Yeah.
Well, cool.
I hope so. Yeah, I'm sure.
Well,
and you have to come out for a tour, for real.
I like it. I actually live out on Table Bluff Road, so I can see Ferndale from my house.
Nice.
I'm
close by.
Yeah. Well, cool.
That's great.
Well,
awesome. Thank you. Thanks so much again.
The time.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
All right. See y'all soon.
Take care. Bye.
All right, that is it. Another wonderful Humboldt Holding Up podcast in the books. Steph, you and I have to go to Ferndale and frolic with the bovines.
Yeah, we have been invited on a couple of farm tours now from some of our guests, so I need to make my way down, a little ways south and take some folks up on this, and gotta try out some of this Ferndale Organics A2A2 milk that has an really nice ring to it.
A2A2
milk. We were told that it is acceptable to just call it A2 milk. So if we want to shorten it to just A2, that's okay. And yeah, go ahead and if you're interested in finding Ferndale Organics A2 with A2 milk.
Yeah. R2D2's also, yeah.
If you would like to try some of this R2D2 milk, you can find it in many of your local grocery stores.
Yeah.
And, as always, stay healthy. Drink milk, get your calcium, get your vaccine, please.
Yeah. And go to the river, probably.
Yeah. Nothing like a nice glass of cold milk on a hot summer day at the river in Humboldt.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be the new, you know, we've talked about other beverage crazes. I think that the alcoholic sparkling water.
Yeah.
I think that milk is going to be the next craze in beverages. Yeah,
bring it back.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks all.